Oops, I don't know if I logged into the right one.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hi guys. I don't know why I can't hear anybody for some reason. It's like it sounds like everything's real low. I'm gonna have to log back out.
Well, hey everybody, welcome. How's everything going? Is anyone on a cell phone or a computer phone?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. Well, let's start with any updates. When's progress notes? Who would like to begin?
Dave, I have a question for you.
Okay, this is?
Anne Marie.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I missed last week's class. I was traveling during the class time.
Right.
Uh-huh. And when I logged in to listen to the notes, it took me to last year's recording, not this current class.
Okay. Let me give you the IT guy, because you can
okay.
If you have any questions or any glitches whatsoever, the CTA IT guy is Bill, and his email is bill@coachtrainingalliance.com.
Those
old recordings should have been deleted because they're confidential. But
yep.
So thanks for mentioning that. I'll check into that too, but in direct communication to him.
Okay. I will send an email evening. Thank you.
You bet. Absolutely. Who else? Other things going on? When's progress notes? You received the invitation to the mentor group. I wanted to go ahead and include you. I usually wait until the training is over, but that's a quarterly mentor group that we do every quarter, and look at various kinds of things, from marketing to updates. I send a white paper for continuing education. We talk about We kind of use the group as a mastermind, people who have questions or things that they'd like the group to brainstorm about. We bring that. It's usually a lively and fun time. Also, you'll see in that email the link that you can send anyone you would like, clients, colleagues, the Roadmap Case Studies book. There are 32 cases in there. It's edited by me and annotated with an introduction to each of the five sections, and that's something that may be of interest to you because I think it'll enhance your practice. And the authors of the book voted to let everyone who's done the training for New Life Story or New Money Story Mentor to be able to have that link to have access for their clients and colleagues. So that's a resource that I think you'll find interesting. If you haven't already gotten the book, I think you'll find it interesting. And I want to mention we'll need four dates for each of you doing a roadmap case study. So what I'm looking at here, to save the last time or two for wrap up and material. May I have a volunteer for someone to present the first roadmap case study on November 9th?
I will do it. It's Grace.
Okay, Grace. Super. Thank you very
much. Oh, 9th. On the 9th. Pardon me. I'm traveling. I'll be on the plane that day. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. You want to
take
November 16th?
9th. Yeah, I can do 16th.
Okay. All right. November 9th is open. May I have a volunteer?
I'll do the 9th, Dave. This is Anne Marie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And who will do the November 30th? We won't meet the week of Thanksgiving. Who will do November 30th?
This is Stephanie. I can do November 30th because
okay.
I'll be back in town.
Okay, great. All right, and I'm going to put Emmy, since she is too far away in Germany to protest, I'm going to put her for December 7th, and I'll send this this schedule around to everyone. Well, what about what we're talking about in the seminars, what you're reading the curriculum, questions, clarifications, or any cases or vignettes or issues that you have with your clients? What would be helpful for you to talk about? We have a bit of time, especially before we begin the roadmap case study. So what would be most helpful? This is our chance to do a true seminar instead of me just talking. So I'm interested in your thoughts and feedback and your input.
Well, truth be told, on my end, Dave, I have catching up to do from last week. So I do feel a little unprepared, if you will.
Okay. I understand.
But that's my goal for this week.
Okay. All right, great. Who else? Other thoughts or other things to discuss?
Well, if no one else wants to share, I want to share something, then maybe you can tell me or us, Dave, how helpful or is that helpful? You know, I read in the manual that it says you can't have or live a new life story, or you can't abandon the old story until you create a new story. So I did like a psychological or an inner work experience this past week. And 'cause I found, you know, my core story is that when my mother died at 8, I became alone and abandoned when my father couldn't take care of us either. And so the story that I created, and it's probably not the story that I don't know how, you know, how we're going to do the roadmap, but this story is kind of like a psychological inner story that to tell my inner child that she is no longer alone. And so what I did is I imagined that I, the adult me, is meeting my my inner child. And so I asked what age she was when I met her and when I saw her. And at first I created a safe space for us to meet.
Uh-huh.
And so she was 6. And that was interesting. I kind of left it open. And so it was interesting because my mother's death came when I was 8. And so her meeting me at 6 is kind of preempted the big event when I was 8. And so I created
when did the process of your mother's death began?
My mother died when I was 8 from childbirth.
Okay.
And so what's really interesting is that this is kind of just like the imagination took care of the timeline and all that. And this is just like not planned. The story was not anything I planned. It was just like imagination taking over, and which was really an interesting story because what happened is I introduced myself to her kind of like, in fact, she ended up calling me mother. And so it is like, I became her mother, and then she also was aware of my current children, and, I mean, you know, anything goes. This is imagination, you know, and so she was no longer alone because she had these kids that are now my grown-up kids, you know, and so I was able to, I remember seeing in Facebook this beautiful Filipino home that was very simple and native, but so beautiful. And I gave that to her, and so she had a safe place to be, and then she had all the help she needed. And so it was like the things were changed. There was abundance. There's all the help. She was not alone. She had all the playmates. And I thought that was really cool. It gave the child a different experience. And when and so I think it changes the life events too.
You change.
Anyway,
story.
I don't want to go any further than that.
Thank you for sharing that, and that's very remarkable description of how you changed your story. You did a transformation from a story of abandonment to a story of abundance.
Yeah.
That is the present experience that you're creating now, the story you're writing now.
Yes. So that's cool. So that one works, huh?
It's working. How does it feel?
It felt so good. I mean, when I was done, it was
that's
like...
That's your answer. The body never lies. Feelings never lie. And the little girl or the little boy inside us never lie either.
Yeah. And what is so amazing about that one is it wasn't...
What's different is you're listening. And you're listening from the present experience.
Yeah.
To an earlier self, not going back there, because going back there would recreate abandonment again. Because
right.
What you're not doing is abandoning that little six-year-old girl.
Yeah.
You're creating a presence that is here and now, that
yeah.
is the antithesis of abandonment. It's of presence. And that girl joins you now. You don't go back there. She joins you now. And she's been waiting for a long time. She's held in safekeeping the very best of you, some of the essence of you, waiting until it's time.
Yeah.
It's your turn.
I thought it was so cool that she.
Absolutely.
It was so cool that she knew about my children. Of course, it's me. Of course, I know about my children. But
uh-huh.
It's just cool coming from the child, you know.
Uh-huh.
And she was thrilled about. Playing with my children. That's really funny.
Congratulations about that work. That
thank you.
Significant and very vivid.
Thank you.
You know, I heard someone who was quoting someone at an AA meeting who said, "I've abandoned all hope of a better past," which is another way of saying I'm going to just be in the present moment now.
Yeah.
And be in now and next. So you change your story and you feel it.
Yes.
It's a transformation.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's terrific.
You're welcome.
I think you've just begun. 'Cause I think there's a tremendous wisdom in that wise child.
Yeah, that's cool.
Who finally has oxygen and recognition.
Yeah.
I just want to say thanks to Grace for sharing that story because it was very inspirational. Very
inspirational. Aw, you're welcome.
Yeah, that's terrific. One of those hard work miracles, because I would suggest, Grace, that this is not an event. This is not a process that's only occurred in the last 2 or 3 weeks that we've been doing this. This is a process that has been underway for some time. This is just another step, another increment in an ongoing process that finally crystallizes awareness, so it seems like it's monumental and all or nothing, but it's a process that's been going on for a long, long time. I mean, since how long that little girl has been holding in safekeeping some of the essence of you, waiting until you were ready to accept it.
Yeah. And you know what else that makes me think that it's real? Is that as I am writing, because I write this, you know, I journal and the conversation is written between us. I'm weeping profusely.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I feel like, wow, this is really happening, you know.
Yeah. And if you disbelieve in any way, that little girl is emboldened enough now to kick your ass. And, well, she should. anything else any of you would like to discuss or add? Well, I'll begin with the material unless anyone has anything. As you know, we've looked at the first four steps of the roadmap: recognizing authorship, own your present story, assess the storylines and the plot, and decide what to change. Today we're going to talk about step five, mapping changes. As you know, insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something that they're struggling with, yet they haven't changed? Underlying causes are always present for any problem, often complex, multi-determined causes. But a coaching approach is to use causes, feelings, history, simply as information to focus on now and plan for next in the choice architecture of the present moment. At times, simply doing what is currently effective dissolves barriers. Remember, I quoted Jung, who said, some problems can't be solved, they just have to be outlived. And people need nudges when they're least likely to make good decisions. For example, decisions that are really difficult and charged, or that are really rare, where you don't have any practice at it, or for which you don't get feedback, or where you have trouble actually translating it into understandable terms, or when someone persists in reentering the old story, which etches it further in the brain each time. Now, there are six crucial elements to map change. This is in your outline. I want to talk about how to understand and incorporate each of these six, which is an outline to master a story. One, regulate states of mind. Now, as a preface, this is so important, we're going to devote an entire seminar to this, and as you see in the curriculum, there's an entire module, Module 4, devoted to this. Let me just give you a kind of a précis to this. Dr. Vernon Smith won a Nobel Prize in economics, in part by demonstrating how market bubbles are created. He did a series of trading experiments with economics graduate students. They were informed that the fair value, the actual value of a security, was $3. So these traders knew the actual worth of the security, a significant advantage over the Wall Street trader situation. Now, what happened in price bidding? They still ran the price up significantly past the $3 mark. They ran it up to in the $5.60 range. When other traders in the experiment stopped paying premium, the laboratory market crashed. Now, same people, second time around, the same group formed another smaller bubble. They ran it up to in the 450 range this time. It wasn't until the third time around that these investors wised up enough to stay within the security's actual value of $3, even though they knew this from the very start. Now, when Dr. Smith repeated the experiment with finance professors and other economic specialists, they formed the same kind of bubbles, not as extreme, but did the bubbles twice with two crashes, and it wasn't until the third time that they stuck to the actual value. So, bubbles are formed by optimism and collective tilt, getting in a feedback loop, increases in price stimulate optimism, causing more buying, the price increases, until the bubble, which is to say the state of mind, shifts. It's kind of like the equivalent of the child who says, you know, the emperor doesn't really have any clothes on. Now, this seemingly irrational force that overrides our logic and knowledge and causes us to believe that rising prices will continue to rise indefinitely, or at least as long as we're betting on them, is human behavior. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determine how we perceive and how we process information and how we respond. we each have a different set of states of mind, different states of mind, different software programs, relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention, confidence. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind to know which state works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing versus editing. Two different parts of the brain, two different states of mind, and very different functions. Brainstorming versus completing a project is another example. When someone is in an emotional state, they're overbalanced toward right brain response, the feeling brain. In extreme stress, the emotional brain hijacks the intellectual logical brain and can hold it entirely hostage. So what do? Your brain is working against you. When you're in any state of upset, the first order of business is to regulate feelings to restore a cool state, a balance of left and right brain. Now, poker players call it tilt. When someone loses big or wins big, they're emotional and inclined to play the last hand or the leftover emotion. So with any kind of tilt, simply break the state of mind. Get centered and grounded. It may be to step away from the poker table or the conference or dinner table, to take a walk, wash your hands and face with cold water, breathe deeply, take a time out, even sleep on it. Each of these things that I mention are ways that change or go through different states of mind. Let me think about that and get back to you is a decision. And we're going to explore this more fully in session six, states of mind. And I have a system for working with clients to get grounded and centered to make more effective decisions. It's a single piece of paper. I'm going to send it to you prior to session six. Then you can respond when your state of mind is balanced, because the brain decision, the brain equation for good decisions is right brain emotional plus left brain logical intellectual equals a balanced decision. Your response to a mistake, for example, affects the quality and effectiveness of your next experience. The number two element to map changes. The power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus simply selects that frequency. It's like saying all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of hundreds of possibilities. We then transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, the channel. Change your thoughts. Now, the bad news is if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over. According to quantum physics, we each generate energy frequencies or vibrations. We project energy in our emotions and thoughts that are the source of what and who we attract, as well as the basis of our well-being. The quantum Zeno, Z-E-N-O, effect says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. The brain rewires, in other words. Now, this concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is way more effective than a problem focus. The brain connections literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality that we see. And remember, whenever you look at a problem focus, you go back into the circuitry that already exists. When you look at possibility, you're creating new neuronal pathways and networks. The already existing circuitry is further etched even when you focus on existing problems, which is why some people can get stuck in therapy. Neuroscience validates the reality that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts that's most beneficial, but a focus on awareness of choices. Now, the law of attraction, I'm sure most of you have seen the film The Secret. The law of attraction is based in neuroscience. If you lay a paper clip and a nail side by side, nothing happens. When you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paper clip. Why? Because the molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction. The same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction, when you're really focused, you have power. So, what are you doing with your personal energy field? Each moment, how do you align and focus that? There's a paper under the articles tab on my website about the neuroscience behind The Secret. It may be of interest to you if you have time to look at it. But the essence of it is this. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want by focusing that energy. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that. I can save you some money. Or manifest a pizza. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story you want. And remember in the film The Secret, they kept emphasizing ask, believe, and receive. I think it doesn't quite work that way because receiving is kind of a passive position. I think it should be ask, believe, and create. In other words, take a proactive position, the ABCs. In fact, my grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 4 decades before it was released. She simply said, wishes don't wash dishes. Now, the paradox is that we don't attract what we want, but we attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy field to pursue prosperity. Your unconscious does not register positive or negative, just the focus. It's like saying a print or a negative is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. So the power of focus is whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing, not just the opposite of what you don't want. I want to get out of debt. The focus is on debt. So you're going to get what you focus on, debt. I want to lose weight. The focus is on overweight. And here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray summarized it really succinctly. He said, your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind works to make it true. Now, notice which people worry about illness. Which people talk about pains or disorders. The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So, put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities instead of problems, desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you want, what you don't want falls away like your lap when you get up to walk. Now, the energy that we're talking about is not the energy of stamina, as in tired versus refreshed, but that of energy field, this invisible, very real connection. And think about how someone's energy field instantly tells you whether they're warm and inviting, cold or stay away, charismatic, energetic. Quantum physics gives us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. And you can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called it a unified field theory. Basically, he said the human mind and body are bundles of energy and interact with a larger energy field of a group or even a specific energy field of another person. This is how we can read people, focus our choices, even determine the flow of our future. So, what do you do to tap into this collective field? We project energy frequencies, and like a magnet, we attract what we focus on. If we focus on the negative and on problems, that's exactly what we're going to create. If we focus on the positive and on solutions, that will be what we create. Now, the addendum to this is that actions have to be in alignment with thinking. Negative or positive results don't just happen, but they come about as a result of actions. And that's why my revision to the ABCs, ask, believe, and create. Consistent negative thoughts send negative chemicals into the body, and dis-ease results. When you're grounded and connected, and these are basically physics terms, when you're grounded and connected to yourself, it opens doors and creates synchronicity. A popular term is in the zone. It's an internal alignment of your energy field. Your choices set this flow into motion, just as other choices cause derailment of this process. You set your day in motion, and you wake up happy and excited about what you'll do that day. Days when nothing goes right can usually be traced to an instant when you become disconnected from yourself, such as a bad feeling or a disturbing thought, or just stubbing your toe when you get out of bed. You create your state of mind and set yourself on a particular path. Now, here's a way in mentor coaching to actually determine that. I came about this with working with a couple of people who I was invited to do a Vistage, the CEO group, a Vistage presentation on regulating states of mind, because one was CEO, one was a business owner. It was a group of like 17 people. Two had been having for 3 to 4 months each significant difficulties with themselves and in their companies because each had had a very unfortunate incident occur at their business. In one, someone was killed, and another was an accident that injured a number of people. So they were having a difficult time getting up and getting started. They were in a negative state of mind. They were feeling stressed, not able to do anything about it. We talked about this much in the same way we're talking right now. And what I suggested that they do is this. Each morning when we get up, we invariably began asking ourselves questions like, what's going to happen today? You know, what am I going to do? What am I going to contribute? Whenever something is really like a cloud over our heads, it's the first thing we think about. It's what we ask ourselves before we ever get out of bed. Now, these kind of questions and this kind of awareness is usually unconscious in the beginning, that we're asking ourselves questions without even being aware of asking questions. But when something like that is hanging, we've probably all had the experience, something's hanging over your head, it's the first thing you think of as soon as you blink before you open your eyes, certainly before you turn on the bedside lamp. So what I suggested that they each do is to write 3 questions that were empowering questions the night before or the day before. Questions that would immediately put them in a very positive, empowered state of mind, and put them by their bed. And when they woke up, the first thing they did before they ever got up, as soon as they turned on the lamp, was to answer these questions, to put them in an optimum, empowered state of mind. And that initial state of mind usually carries over into the morning and usually the rest of the day, because our state of mind determines the meaning that we attach to something, and the meaning we attach determines our behavior. So that's why in mentor coaching, state always comes first, then strategy and story. So when we regulate a state of mind, we have a very empowering way of helping someone. So they found significant benefit in the first week. There was a turnaround for themselves and their companies. So, the secret, rather than being about wishing for something and getting it, is about understanding and refocusing personal energy. Here's another example. Infertility. For someone who has an urgency to get pregnant, a couple, the desperation can sabotage intention and create a response in the body that can prevent pregnancy. When you release the urgency and focus on positivity, it changes the results. A study was done on couples who had had three consecutive spontaneous miscarriages, did some work on this, and the result was that over 90% were then able to successfully conceive the next time. The next pregnancy, we're successfully able to achieve. Period. I'm going to leave it at that. The law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works equally for positive or negative thoughts, good things or bad things. You keep coming back to what you run away from. You attract what you resist because you engage it with focused emotion. So the most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. Most focus is outside awareness. The challenge is to target the specific outcomes you want. Another is to discover all the things that you focus on that you don't want, and then make a list so that you will immediately notice when you start thinking about them. This list will cue your radar for early recognition and to move then to what you do want, what you do want to be thinking about. And be specific about what you want, not just what you don't want in disguise. Like, I want a reliable car. Focuses on the expectation the car may break down and need repairs. I want a relationship in which I'm treated well. Focuses on the notion that it's possible that you won't be and you'll have to reverse it. Now, I want to do just a brief exercise with you. I'd like you. I'm gonna put us on lecture mode so that you can do this out loud. I want you to be able to do it out loud. Okay, I'm going to make a statement, and I want you to say out loud, your wish is my command. So I'm going to say a statement, and then you're going to follow with, your wish is my command. I'm tired. I'm late. I'm overweight. I feel overwhelmed with the number of things I have to do. I've been eating healthily all day. I just worked out and I feel invigorated. I have a specific plan to do exactly what I need to do in my business. Anybody want to share your experience of these phrases and your wish is my command? What did you experience with them?
Hi, this is Stephanie.
Uh-huh.
It's actually quite eye-opening to do it the way that you just did it, because it's what I teach my clients, but to do it the way that you just did it is like, it's brilliant, because as you made a statement and I said, your wish is my command, literally my body physically responded to the idea that what I've just said is or heard or said typically has been approved. So whether it's a positive statement or a negative statement, it's all approved.
Uh-huh.
So when you moved on to the positive statements, then it made me feel empowered and excited, and whatever anxiety I might have been having about the statements that you were making dissipated. The negative statements that you made, it dissipated. I started hearing the positive statements. So that's brilliant. Thank you for that.
Other experiences like Stephanie's?
David Gray? Go ahead. I'll go later.
I was going to say, I could The first few, I could feel myself actually sinking or retreating into my chair versus the others. You know, my body was just opening up. My shoulders were coming up. My head was, I was looking up as opposed to down. So it was a very physical response for me.
And did it shift then?
It shifted when the statements went to eating healthy, et cetera. Yeah, so when
okay.
It went from the negative to the positive.
Okay.
I went from sort of sinking and retreating to sitting straighter and looking up.
Okay. All right, great. And Grace, you had something to add?
Yeah. When you first said the negative things, I was like, I was reluctant to say what you ask us to say, your wish is my command, because it just felt like negative.
Uh-huh.
And then so I said the words anyway. And then when you switch into the positive statements, I had like excitement within me. And I said, yeah, you know, yes, your wish is my command. You know, so there was definitely a different physical reaction, you know,
uh-huh.
from me.
Okay.
A lot more excitement, and in the latter half, and then in the earlier, was almost like fearful, like I don't want that to stick on me. And one of them was like, I feel overwhelmed, and I have said that, you know, lately because I have so much to do, and I was like, ooh, not good. You know.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for sharing. That this is an articulate your unconscious exercise, because your wish is my command is articulating your unconscious. You just don't usually think of it that way. You just don't usually think of it consciously. But you say, you know, I'm tired, or you know, I'm late, or you know, I haven't been eating well. And your unconscious is very actively saying, your wish is my command. So it's always working. Whether you're aware of that shadow story or not, it's always there. So this is an emphasis to make that a conscious aspect. And it's a benefit of thinking in a positive and constructive way. I mentioned to you, I'm going to be sending you when it's revised, a copy of Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual, and it has in it a chapter on visualization, kind of a scientific way of approaching visualization and affirmations, because visualizations are about rewiring your brain. Affirmations are about revising your mind software. So what we're doing here is we were just, you know, articulating your software that's there, that's operative all the time. So thinking in this way is not magical. It requires discipline, and that's why most people don't have a spectacular result. Spectacular results require mind and brain consistency for a number of days, 25 or 30 days minimum, even for simple behavioral response things, without reverting back to the old pattern. And you're going to naturally be ambivalent and resist change. Just don't act on it. So the pen is in your hand to write your story. And since you're writing your script, two questions. Are your thoughts worthy? And are they worthy of you? Two quotes. One is from William James, the father of American psychology. Wisdom is learning what to overlook. And the other is from my grandmother, the secret critic. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Think about that. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. A final focus vignette. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies. The other is good. It's joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, faith, The grandson thought about this for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, which wolf wins? And the wise Cherokee simply said, the one you feed. I want to mention one thing before we leave this topic. I want to recommend a book, and this is an author and a book that I've recently become familiar with because she was my guest each month on my mastermind group. We meet for like 2.5 hours. It's a group of people who have completed the New Life Story training or the New Money Story Mentor training, and it's a tremendous group. It's one of my favorite parts of the whole month. And the last 45 minutes, I have an expert content contributor, somebody who's very well known, who has a significant contribution, usually who has, you know, books or things that I will send each member. And I sent each member a copy of this book before we met. Her name is Jackie Woodside, Woodside. And her book is Calming the Chaos. And she did a terrific presentation and interaction. Her book, to date, is the best compilation of different disciplines and approaches of understanding energy fields and incorporating it into mentor coaching. So I really recommend it. I think it's a terrific book. It's a paperback. It's been out for a little while, but she's very savvy and has a real understanding of energy fields and integrates the use of the principles from different disciplines. You know, we've been talking about a number of disciplines, psychology, neuroscience, quantum physics, behavioral economics. We're going to talk about neuroeconomics, a number of things, along with strategic coaching. So I think the answer is not in one discipline because, you know, like if a guy only has a hammer, he's going to see a bunch of stuff as a nail. So I think there's a lot of need for a synthesis and integration of different disciplines, and this is a book I'd recommend. So I want to introduce here what I'm going to be talking about a bit more in the chapter I'm going to send you. The third component here is to visualize changes. I want to give you an example of an application of this. Basketball player, and this was the original experiment, the original study that began to demonstrate this some time ago. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into three groups to practice shooting free throws. First group, no practice for 1 month. Second group, 30 minutes of practice daily at shooting free throws. And the third group practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws, nothing but net, at least 5 minutes a day for 30 days. So at the end of the 30 days, they were tested. First group, no practice, 0% improvement. Second group, actual practice, 30 minutes daily, 24% improvement. Third group, practice by visualization only, 23% improvement. Now, almost the same. Now, in subsequent studies, when the method has been more progressive in terms of refining the visualization surpasses actual practice because you don't have to do like a near miss and recalibrate your pathway of getting there. You just do only nothing but net, the perfect. So what you're doing when you're visualizing is rewiring your brain. On brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as when somebody's actually shooting. So create a vision. Then look back to see the path to get there. The most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a vision. Every image draws you towards the conclusion. An image is like a goal. If you create a negative image, such as, I can't dance, or I'll look goofy if I really cut loose, now I have no trouble coming up with some of these examples, then that will be a destination that your brain will draw you to. If you picture yourself as not able to dance, when you go to your party, your image says, I can't dance. you're going to stay in that zone of the self-image. You create your experience. You can create something else instead. So create an image of your goal and live into it. So here's a focus and visualization exercise. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture what you'll look at your ideal weight. Look at those pictures daily. Write down your ideal body weight range. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body, your true body self. And remember, it has to be your body at ideal weight. You can't lose weight and have Alicia Keys' body. Don't focus on losing weight, on the negative. Don't focus on fat thoughts like slow metabolism, hereditary body size, slow thyroid, or the spirit of Great Aunt Sally that channeled large thighs. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have. Gratitude and abundance. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. Visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. Think and feel as though your desire is manifest. Create your body as your life, intentionally. And remember the ABCs. Ask, believe, create. Now, just a little bit about the art of the vision. Visualization is a way to rehearse for your future. It takes both art and science to establish a vision. You're programming a future memory. Now, and those of you who have done the CTA training with me, remember in the initial aspect of the training, I go through the visualization of a yellow Jeep with you and the story about the executives who wanted me to help them get to a place of writing their first book. When I went through the visualization exercise with them, one of the 24 had actually seen a yellow Jeep in the prior month before the seminar, the retreat that we did. I did the visualization, and I asked them to contact me if anyone saw a yellow Jeep in the next few days. 22 out of 24 either called or emailed to say that they had seen a yellow Jeep. Now, the number of yellow Jeeps didn't increase, but their radar was cued to receive it. It was pre-programmed to be aware of it, and that's exactly what we think about doing and doing with a vision, is you pre-program awareness. And with a vision, you create the complete experience of a success, for example. All of your senses, all five of your senses, what you say, what it feels like, what you're seeing, everything that is the entire experience of that success. And you think about it twice a day, first thing in the morning and last thing in the evening. Now, what someone sees, what appears on the radar screen, is determined by belief and assumption. A yellow Jeep for this group was pre-programmed as possibility. Now, for example, the most common reason people don't earn more money and accumulate wealth is they don't see themselves as capable of it. I can tell you how much money someone's going to make by listening to his or her assumptions. Once someone genuinely sees himself or herself as capable of doing it, all sorts of things begin to happen. The amount of wealth or yellow Jeeps existing in the world doesn't change. You just code your radar for possibility. Now, it's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they're part of your identity. A vision, though, starts at the other end, the successful outcome. If someone has a fear of success or a fear of failure, this visioning process bypasses that fear and etches the successful outcome. In the film, The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. Our possibilities are only limited by the ones we allow ourselves to see. Now, the science of the vision is that recent PET scans, positive emission tomography of the brain, have confirmed several things about visualization. Visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain in the same way that input coming from the optic nerve. The brain can't tell where it originated, in your mind or through your optic nerve. The brain assimilates a mental picture, whether the stimulus is from the optic nerve or imagined. Replays of the visualization, such as repeating the vision of having successfully attained a goal, programs neural networks and neural pathways to more strongly etch each experience. Mental visualization of a complex movement can actually improve performance. And PET scans have also established that thoughts result in physical changes in your brain. And you know that simply by picturing a danger, you can trigger the entire body response of fight or flight. So when you program your unconscious, you actually create a future memory to live into. Your brain can't tell who conjured it, you or reality. The more detailed your visual image, the more specifically etched your brain will be. Now, here's the key. You don't make the brain changes permanent unless you incorporate them into your story. Otherwise, it doesn't register or it gets extruded as noise. It can't be relegated to a footnote. For example, if you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live that experience. You then incorporate it as part of your identity rather than it just being a nice idea or that belongs to somebody else. So, your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, but your conscious mind can. And your conscious mind then must incorporate an evolving story to include and assimilate the imagery as part of that story. Otherwise, unconscious messages will delete access to or just believability of the imagery. So the key elements are these three. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly or they'll be eliminated. Secondly, consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to be ultimately metabolized as part of yourself. Otherwise, you'll lose the vision. In other words, this is programming new identity. And third, be very specific about the experience of having achieved the goal. The specific detail, all the sensory detail. Now, here's a margin note. Write it down for review. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 minutes in short-term memory. Then it's gone, unless it's either emotionally significant or unless you work to log it in. So visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes your brain. A vision serves as both guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Here's an example. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was in prison, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 by one stroke on two occasions. He had 99s, and everything else was in triple digits. So to preserve his sanity, he learned to visualize golf. Each day, he would get dressed, imagine driving to his favorite country club, experienced everything in great detail, smell the fragrance of the trees and the grass, looked at the sky, warmed up, made every shot with his body, walked to the next shot, practiced swing, did the shot. After he was released from his captivity, playing golf in his mind 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing You shot a 74. The power of a vision of mind over matters. The fourth element to map change. Insight changes the brain. Let's talk about that for a minute. At the moment of insight, an aha experience, in other words, a complex new set of neural connections is created. Three different parts of the brain light up with an aha experience, a moment of insight. And when that happens, their neurochemical responses are changed. Someone is vaulted into a state of mind of greater creativity, synthesis, and integration. Now, consider when someone is given information, a directive, an order, nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. There's no change of the neurochemistry, no change of the state of mind. So, as important as this insight-induced change is, it's the sustained attention that hardwires it in the brain circuit. The number five element to map change, take action. The world will not pay you for what you know. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize are important. Payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. It may not be perfect, but they self-correct and keep moving forward, learning from their mistakes and producing results. This is why a group sometimes of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure something out. I was on a board of directors like this once for starting a new organization, but then struggle to make it happen. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the first semester of community college owns a lot of real estate on the west side of town. Take action. Number six, identity transformation. A new experience or an idea needs to be focused on consistently and frequently. When the attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The mindset of identity then incorporates this new experience and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a component of one's identity. Otherwise, it's not integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or just attributed to lack of luck or circumstance. So the most important thing about a goal is having one, and wisdom is to know the right path to pursue that goal. Integrity is to take it. So I want to summarize now the science of change in mentor coaching, what we're talking about with this step about mapping changes, step five. We focus on solutions rather than understanding why, on looking at co-creating options rather than giving advice or dictates. Now, since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change the wiring. The first requirement is claiming ownership of the story, to recognize the story, to own it, in order to understand, assess, and change. Peter Drucker said the most pressing task is to teach people how to learn. So here are what I believe are the important elements in mapping change in this step. Concentrate on new behaviors rather than problems in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying the problem won't solve it. Co-create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to lay new mental maps. Regulate your state of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning. Left brain plus right brain, intellectual plus emotional. Actually, regulate state of mind, it should be first, because remember I said state always comes first, then strategy and story. Facilitate insight rather than give advice. people can usually discriminate between inquiries that prompt insight and ones that are kind of veiled attempts at persuasion. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Remember, the power is in the focus. Emphasize positive adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Facilitate new behaviors and guide the development and actualization of new mental maps. Collaboratively conceptualize the mental map, the internal model of the client, in order to facilitate a new level of mastery. You're creating a new story when you're doing this, new metaphors. In the event of diversion to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas. As mentor coaches, we are guides. We can interrupt, and this is, remember I mentioned, this is an agreement that I have with every client who I have ever worked with, that, and so far everybody's given me permission, everybody except my wife has given me permission to do this, so that you can help someone, if they move back without even being aware of it, into an old story, an old pathway. You can redirect ideas and energy to the new ideas. Remember, the power is in the focus, and that permanent change arises from the consistency of that focus. Knowledge conveyed passively is inert. Knowledge generated through insight changes the mind and brain. And finally, conceptualize the meta map with the client in order to master and internalize the process. This helps create the outline to incorporate the new experiences as a storyline and part of an evolving identity. So I'm interested in any thoughts or questions or clarifications that that you have about any of this. Is this making sense to you as an evolved concept in creating a new story?
Dave, I had an example that I wanted to share with you.
Terrific.
Particularly about visualizing changes. I play on a women's indoor soccer team on Wednesday nights, and it's mostly women, you know, call it 30s and 40s. We're not young pups. And I noticed that during the Women's World Cup, the 1 month while the Women's World Cup tournament was playing, that not just my team, but all of the teams seemed to be bringing a very different game during the,
yeah,
the period of the tournament. I mean, we were moving faster. We had more ball control. We were taking a little bit more risk with our moves and our shots. And, you know, the first week I thought maybe it was just a coincidence, but really during that entire tournament, and, you know, I'm thinking you probably have 20, 30, 40 women who are watching. I watched every single game in the tournament. I know I wasn't alone.
Oh, yeah.
And I debated mentally whether it was coincidence, don't believe in them, but or whether there really was something to the fact that we were probably all sitting around watching soccer at least one or two times a night and watching very, very talented women play. And as I sat and listened to you talking, visualizing the change, I firmly believe now that that's what was at play. Is we were, you know, we were watching benchmarks, we were seeing successes, we were getting excited, thinking we could do certain things, and we did them. So that was my example. And and unfortunately, I think we've all gone back to, because as you said, we didn't necessarily change the story. We didn't necessarily embrace it as a new story. So there's a bit of reversion that's happened.
Well, okay, there's a lesson in that. You changed the story, but you didn't make it permanent to be able to access that energy field as part of an ongoing identity. It's a great example, and I think it's very true. And I think it's an example of synchronicity. An example that I noticed in the mastermind group when Jackie Woodside was guest, everyone had read the book, and we had been trying to think, we were working on a legacy project. The group wanted to do something and make a, you know, contribute to an e-book that was, you know, something like I Wish I'd Known That, but we were having trouble getting our arms around it, but that group, before she came and after everybody had read the book, it just clicked, and it transcended anything we had done before, and it was just all so clear all of a sudden. And I think it was that kind of energy field synchronicity. In fact, there is a woman I know who's a Jungian analyst. Her name is Tess Castleman, C-A-S-T-L-E-M-A-N. She's written a book called Threads, Tapestries, Knots, K-N-O-T-S. And in it, she describes this phenomenon of synchronicity. And she noticed that in her women's groups, that every once a week when they would meet, the group would not have contact in between time. Nobody would talk to each other. Nobody would get together and plan anything. But she noticed that as the group really gelled and moved along, that every time they had a group meeting, all the women wore some variation of a single color. And nobody talked about it, but like, you know, for one night they'd all be wearing some kind of version of deep blue or purple. Another night, you know, and she just she noticed that and used that as an example of synchronicity, a kind of a shared energy field that people have that can create state changes. And maybe it's too strong to say, or too all or nothing to say in terms of state changes, but it creates an energy field that then is shared. So my prediction is that in our lifetimes that there will be increasing awareness of, description of, and ability to effectively address these issues about energy fields that are otherwise not explained or just seem too woo-woo to really discuss too far. Jackie does this in her book. But think about how, in a very practical way, something that's always intrigued me is like the collective energy field of a sports arena or stadium. The same teams play the same team, so it's pretty much a controlled study. But when teams are away, they lose almost twice as many games as they do when they're home. The negative collective energy field of away games and the very positive energy of home games. And in the NBA, where they play 140 games, I mean, it's a controlled study every year for every team. So there's something there, I think, that we're going to be learning more and more about, and already are in some ways. So thanks for that example. That's great.
Can I have a follow-up question to that example, Dave, please?
Sure.
When the ladies started to lose the height of their performances, what could have they done, or what can we suggest to do in order to maintain it? I know, like, what kind of story making can they do, could have they done, to maintain it?
I'll bet Anne-Marie, you've thought some about this. What
I have.
Okay. I don't want to get money on that one. Go ahead.
I think if I was to go back to July, I think the first thing I would have done is to honored what I was noticing as real, as opposed to, and actually had some discussion about it and thought of ways that we could all harness it into making it a permanent part of our team story, our dynamic. I think believing that we are that talented and that we have those skills and that they weren't just an accident of watching, again, their power of visualizing that improvement and visualizing that talent in ourselves was powerful, but also then believing that it was real.
Absolutely, and both of those are very important. The visualization is one thing and the belief is another. You know, I do some work with pro athletes and pro actors, and this is something that sort of intuitively a really fine coach will do to create a vision, create the kind of the atmosphere and the energy field of this, but I think it's something that can be done in a different way for solo performers as for team sports. But like when you're talking about a team sport, I think it can be a combination of visualization plus the co-constructed story before you go out in the arena to perform that can activate those visions. So it can be a combination of both the collective energy field of the team as well as each individual, because like your vision of what is success for you is going to be just a little bit different than the person at your left shoulder. And how that's going to look for you is going to be just a little bit different. It's similar for, you know, your vision of success is different if you're a wide receiver as opposed to, you know, being, you know, an offensive lineman. You know, you have different roles. Now, it's not that great for what you do probably, but it would be a combination of those. So that's a very interesting question and a really interesting application.
I think I always wondered, too, my last thought, I know we're running on time, your point on the good coaches and the professional coaches and what we can do as mentor coaches. I personally have always seen a difference in professional sports, especially, or college sports, excuse me, those coaches that sort of scream and yell versus the Mike Krzyzewskis that have that calm, cool collective.
Uh-huh.
And I think bringing that balance and bringing that energy, reinforcing that energy is also a big part of the success of whoever it is we're talking about. Also something different we could have done as a team, looking back, you know, to keep it going. So
and two barely related things. But one is that what we know now is the coach who screams at the player and points out the missed play or the person that the quarterback didn't see is going to enhance that behavior because of highlighting it. Another is, as mentor coaches, my belief is the most important thing that I can possibly do or be or give to my client is to believe in that client, because that belief is going to be conveyed in various ways and midbrain to midbrain, just like a state of mind is conveyed midbrain to midbrain, like confidence. So that belief in the client is going to be, and in fact, we now know from neuroscience that a belief in someone actually changes their mental state. Without ever having to say anything, it changes the mental state of the person who is believed in. Now, good parents have known this for centuries, but we're just now showing some of this. So I work only with people in whom I believe. So I think that's really important. The most important thing we can do is believe in somebody. And then they're going to teach us why. And they're going to be able to teach us why once we believe in them. And that is part of the crucible of the connection between the two of you. Well, super example. This is terrific. Thanks so much. And I look forward to picking up right here next time.
Same here.
See you.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.